Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. ManaPro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program and author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Monday, December 19th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other backyard poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the world. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on, like today with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. If you would, if you're listening live right now, you're automatically in the chat room. Just scroll down a little bit on your computer screen. You'll see the chat room's automatically opened up. You're automatically in the chat room if you're listening live. But if you're not registered, you're in there as a guest. Guest, please take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you, too, can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about our hobby and passion of backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainable living, urban farming, urban gardening, preparedness, and a whole lot more. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
Designed for starting and growing game birds, turkeys, ducks, geese, and broilers, ManaPro's Game Bird Showbird Crumbles feature 24% protein and a combination of vitamins, minerals, and yeast culture. This complete feed does it all, from growth and weight gain to healthy development and even improved digestion. So next time you're starting some new birds, try ManaPro's Game Bird Showbird formula and see the difference.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Hey,
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us through the commercial break here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisper. It is a Monday. Yes, I know, we all just absolutely love Mondays, but just a couple of days ago, it was Friday, and before you know it, you tune in here every day, Monday through Friday. I promise you the week will go by so much quicker, including the day. So tune in, and you get on over there to Blog Talk Radio, and you tune in every day at 12. I promise you, we guarantee you some fun times, some laughs, some education, and your day will go by quicker. And before you know it, it will be Thursday. This coming a Thursday, the 22nd of December, will be our last broadcast for the year. And it's going to be an exciting, exciting Thursday, let me tell you. Because not only will we be giving away a brand new chicken coop to one lucky listener on Thursday, guess who's going to be giving the chicken coop away? Yep, you guessed it. Santa Claus. Santa Claus is going to be here joining us live this Thursday. As soon as we start the show, we'll have a little bit of host chat. We'll have a little bit of chickens in the news. And then we're going to get right to the coop giveaway. We will be taking a particular caller. We'll announce that on Thursday when we start the show. And then that particular caller, when we take calls, if they happen to be the right caller, if they have all of the secret passwords we've been announcing since December 1st and they're correct, then they are going to win this beautiful, beautiful chicken coop valued at $650. That's $400 for the coop. Shipping to your front door, depending on where you live, can be up to $250. What a great and fabulous Christmas present that, my friends, will be. Yep, I said it. On Thursday, once Santa Claus gives away that awesome new chicken coop, we are going to be taking calls from all the boys and girls from around the country. I say we, I mean Santa Claus will be here, and we'll have, if cooperating, the live video feed will be up, so the little tykes will be able to see Santa Claus as they talk to him. Last week, we had a direct line up to the North Pole, and we talked to Mrs. Claus. and she let us know that Santa is very anxiously anticipating coming on the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show again this Thursday to give help us give away that awesome chicken coop from MyPetChicken.com and take calls from all the boys and girls and all the little boys and girls chicken lovers from all over the world. So we'll be doing that this Thursday. But today, being Monday, of course, we've got Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. And then, of course, we've got tomorrow, we've got Andrew Odom with tinyrevolution.us. Tinyrevolution.us will be here on Living a Minimalist Lifestyle. Always an exciting show and fun show at that. And then on Wednesday, it'll be Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Garden Wise Living with Arlena. And then Thursday, of course, it'll be our last day of the year, giving away that chicken coop and, of course, welcoming Santa Claus to the show. So we're looking forward to that. So it looks like, let me get over here to the switchboard. Let's see here. Yes, it looks to me as Pat is on the line. So let me go ahead and take a moment to play Pat Foreman. Hey, Pat. Welcome.
Hey, Whisper. Yeah. How are you doing? You sound pretty perky today, even though it's a marvelous Monday.
Yeah, it is it's Manic Monday, Marvelous Monday, and we're dealing with the Monday, but we know that it's short work week, and we've got an exciting week this week, I tell you. We really, really do. In fact, before I forget, since it's such an exciting show, let me go ahead and I'll announce today's secret password. Today's secret password is, you're going to love it, Pat, Tiller. Today's secret
password. That cuts deep.
Literally.
Right. Literally.
Right through the earth.
No pun intended.
Today's secret password is Tiller. And those of you who have been listening and longtime listeners, you know I think every single password collection contest we've ever had, Tiller has been one of the secret passwords, and that is in honor of Pat Foreman. So
beautiful. Boy, you're bruising me now.
Gotta love it. So, today's secret password time is Tiller, and so there's only going to be two more. We'll have a secret password tomorrow, a secret password on Wednesday, and then, boy, hopefully you'll have them all, and on Thursday you can call in and win the awesome chicken coop. So who knows? Who out there feels lucky? Pat, and I normally don't do chickens in the news when we bring on Peter Brown, but I have at least one, possibly two, that I want to share with everybody. So let me get right over here to it. Of course, we paste all these on our let's see through. Let me go ahead and post this one more thing on our Facebook page. You can follow us on Facebook and just go to facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. And I wanted to post this now about calling in to talk to the chicken doctor. Let me scroll down because I have a couple of interesting ones that I wanted to share. So let me get down here and find them. Here, this is very interesting. And I know you're really going to find this interesting, Pat. When I saw this, I thought of you. And I said, well, read this on the air, and this comes to us from a website called Care to Make a Difference. Care to Make a Difference. And here we go, Pat. This is very interesting. There's been a lot of interesting comments on our page as well. Here's the title of the story. Free range hens are less carbon friendly. How about that? Can you imagine? Free-range hens are less carbon-friendly. Now, let me give you the justification here. I'll read the article. It's not very long, and I'll read this to you. A headline out of Australia announces free-range hens produce more greenhouse gas than birds kept in cages, according to The Age. Hens allowed to wander freely require more feed to produce a kilogram of egg than their confined cousins. The result is a 20% increase in a carbon footprint. The Australian Egg Corporation partnered with the government to produce the environmental assessment of an egg production supply chain using life cycle assessment study. The report looks at the whole production supply chain in order to tally the carbon footprint of eggs that find their way to Australian tables. After all the inputs, feed, water, energy, housing, were examined in terms of cost and environmental impact, Australian eggs emerged as a highly efficient form of protein production with respect to the environmental impacts and resources use issues addressed in the study. When compared with other protein foods like meat, eggs came out ahead. The results prompted the Australian Egg Corporation's managing director, James Kellaway, to say, "The egg industry would be very happy to consider adding the environmental footprint or greenhouse gas emission status on egg labels. However, it would be meaningless without other food products having to do it or providing a reference point so consumers can compare food types and food categories." The report is coolly abstract, but the pantheon of objectivity and the rosy comparison with other countries' egg carbon numbers avoid some of the more serious issues in egg production. Take, for instance, the impact on watersheds and the dead zones downstream of big chicken operations. Consider the increase in antibiotic-resistant bacteria in supermarket meats. Think of the implications of eating eggs from hens subject to horrendous cruelty, and contemplate the fate of male chicks. While all of these issues reported in CARE 2 are from the U.S. and Canada, Australia's hands are also stained in terms of its annual welfare record. In fairness, Australia has made strides in the treatment of its egg layers, and 26% of its eggs come from free-range hens. So in Australia, 26% of the eggs come from cage-free or free-range hens. 26%, I bet that's probably more than here in the U.S., but again, look at the definition of free range. I don't know what it is in Australia. Free range here apparently means, or cage free, I guess, has different definitions, so I urge you to take a look at that. It's not enough to consider the carbon footprint of our choices. Our eggnog, poached eggs, and quiches are the end product of a system that treats chickens as if their suffering does not count in comparison with our convenience. Consumers who learn that cage-free hens are harder on the environment than cage birds may accept that as an excuse to continue confining them. Chickens deserve better than this. So, the study kind of, or the article goes in many different directions, but the bottom line was they say because it takes more feed, basically, for the chicken to get the nutrition it needs to actually lay an egg, then it actually poops more because it's intaking more, and then that is, so free-range hens are less carbon-friendly than our cage counterparts. What say you, Pat?
Oh, you know what I'm going to say, Whisper. One, I would like to see the study and the actual indicators they use, because this is a study paid for by industry, for industry, so we've got another one of those, right? And two, I bet they really didn't take into account the oil and the carbon products that are needed to keep those hens warm or cool, or, I mean, you just leave that factor out alone, and that would really skew the results. So it's interesting that they bring that up, but I don't buy it. What about you?
I don't know. I guess if you know, we would have to ask poultry scientist Dr. McCrae. We'll ask Peter Brown when he comes on here, the chicken doctor. Does a free-range bird consume more than, say, a bird that's on strictly, say, laying rations? And then if they're consuming more, doesn't that mean they would, of course, poop more, which then means maybe more a bigger carbon footprint? I think the study could be pretty darn simple. If free-range birds end up having to eat more, which makes them poop more, then of course that to me sounds like they do have a bigger carbon footprint. But I don't know if that justifies all the other inhumane things that go into mass producing hens or eggs. So I don't know. It could be a catch 22. I agree. Y'all have heard me say on this radio show a million times, a study is just that, a study. You have to look at who conducted the study. It's like when you hear orange juice has been proven to prevent certain types of cancer, a study paid for by Minute Maid. So, I mean, it's kind of like, okay, you know, But so yeah, take it like with all studies, I guess, a grain of salt. But we'll try to next year when we have Dr. McRae back on, and just in a moment when we talk to Peter Brown, we'll ask what his take is on that. Again, and I think it's a pretty simple question: do they eat more if they free range to be able to produce eggs? And if they do, then obviously does that mean they're going to poop more? And then does that mean automatically a bigger carbon footprint? So, hey,
I've got to say too, that is such a simple response to a very complicated situation. And the other thing I've got to say is backyard hens, and maybe they do eat more, but their poop is so valuable as a nitrogen fertilizer. And of course, most commercial fertilizers come from oil. So those little poopies in the backyard could help replace some of the oil inputs as well as help grow food and make compost. So,
I agree with that statement, 100%.
There's more to the picture.
Exactly, Pat, exactly. And one more here. I've got to go. This is just because these are so interesting. I've got one more Chickens of the News I want to share. This comes to us from Discovery. Discovery News. Y'all will be familiar with this Discovery channel on TV. This comes to us from Discovery News. The big question for 2012, will we create a dinosaur from a chicken? We've been reporting this on a lot over the last several years. And so could 2012 be the year of the Chickensaurus, the first dinosaur to live in modern times? You might recall our story from a few years ago, and we were just talking about that, describing what was then referred to as Dino Chicken. To recap, Jack Horner, curator of, paleontology at the Museum of the Rockies, told me that he and some colleagues were working to create a dinosaur out of a chicken. The goal is to bring back the goal is to bring back multiple dinosaur characteristics such as a tail, teeth, and forearms by changing the levels of regulatory proteins that have evolved to suppress the characteristics in modern birds. Birds are dinosaurs, so technically they're making a dinosaur out of a dinosaur, Horner explained to me. The only reason we're using chickens instead of some other bird is that the chicken genome has been mapped and chickens have already been exhaustively studied. So it's a not a long article, but I'll let you head over to our Facebook page and finish reading it. So, and we report on this probably about twice a year when we see news articles about it. But 2012, will these scientists create some sort of dinosaur out of a chicken? Now, I did report on a study where they actually were successful and were playing around with DNA, getting teeth to grow in the beak, in the mouth of a chicken. And they never lived to term, if you will. They never hatched out on them. They would always somehow die before they hatched out. But when they opened the egg and studied it, it did have teeth forming inside the beak. So we have reported on that and the progress regarding that with growing teeth in chickens. So it's not the egg tooth, folks, but actual teeth like a dinosaur would have. So very, very, very interesting. So I wanted to share at least those two about the carbon footprint being larger for free range. And, of course, will 2012 be the year of the dinosaur created from a chicken? So you can see.
Wow. Let's bring back Tyrannosaurus Rex, Whisper. I mean, we need that one, right? It's gone extinct. My goodness, what are we playing with? That sounds really scary to me. Oh, dear.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty interesting. So we'll have to...
Hey, Whisper, I've got a really quick one here. Can I give just a real quick Chickens in the News?
Absolutely.
You're going to love it.
Absolutely.
You're going to love it, love it. Food stamps up in high-income area.
Oh, my goodness.
This comes from us from Trenton, New Jersey. New Jersey's Hunterdon County, the hilly region of horse farms and weekend retreats, where last year's median household income was about $98,000. $98,000 is the median income up there. Well, they're showing a new face in federal food aid. Hunterdon, whose 2010 household income was the highest in New Jersey and the fourth highest in the nation, Whisper, fourth highest income in the nation, saw food stamp usage surge 513% between 2007 and 2012. The percentage of U.S. households using food stamps more than doubled in the six of the wealthiest the 10 wealthiest counties in the nation as more residents are jobless and unable to sell their homes. Sometimes people come in a Mercedes, said Gina Davio, who's a program director of Local Services Centers. How about that? Oh, it's hitting everybody.
Well, on my personal Facebook page, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, I had posted a news article. It was I'm not sure which state it was or which news agency, ABC, NBC, CBS. It was covered quite well, I think, by at least two, if I remember correctly, of the major networks, where a young lady who was living in a million-dollar home on the river had been getting food stamps for I think it was several years. And so that ticked off a lot of people. It's very, very interesting. So, but thank you for sharing that. I do appreciate that.
Well, and, it's hitting this great recession is certainly hitting all facets of the country, and you know, I think we're all in for a little bit of belt tightening. I know I've lost some weight. How about you? I mean, it's been pretty brutal, to be honest.
Yeah,
so
lately
it's hitting the wealthy as well as us middle class folkers.
Absolutely. All righty. Well, hey, I'm going to head on over here to the switchboard, and as promised, we're going to bring on, I've already done the secret password for today, bring on our good friend Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Hey, Peter, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Andy. How are you doing?
Good. Okay, the question is, you heard us while we were talking about chickens in the news. Do free-range chickens eat more, and because of that, poop more, and because of that, leave a bigger carbon footprint? What say you?
Well, I'll tell you what I think, and I think if you look at it kind of on the logical side, you can see really you're not – I won't say you, but they in that study certainly not comparing apples to apples.
Uh-huh.
I would suspect very easily if you look at birds who are in a commercial laying house, 100,000 strong, in a house 100 feet wide or 50, 60 feet wide by 500 or 600 feet long. And you've got the 100,000 birds in there, I would say the carbon footprint's going to be smaller on a per bird basis, sure. You know, but if you look at it on a backyard flock basis, I think you have to say yes and you have to say no at the same time. Now that's strange, but it depends on what kind of forage they're eating, you know. The study of mine, I read the study over the weekend, and I think it came out of Australia. You know, most of the place down there hot and dry. Every time I see something going on down there, it's either burning, dying from the heat, no water, and tumbleweed all over the place, what appears to be tumbleweed. So if you're a chicken and you're foraging around and that kind of stuff, you're going to have to go some to produce an egg, and you're going to have to eat a lot of low nutritional value material in order to get yourself to the point where you're going to produce an egg. The production of an egg is one hell of a chore for a chicken. You've heard me say
it before, and I'll say
it again. You know, it takes 45 to 50% plus of all the calcium the bird has mobilized in its body to put shell down on an egg every day, not just when it right now and then, every day. So I think you can skew these numbers any way you want. I would say a backyard flock provided with nice juicy bugs in a more in some of your warmer environments where the bugs are more plentiful year round. Plenty of grass, plenty of fresh water. Our jungle fowl that all the birds have evolved from, they didn't have anybody handing them anything. Granted, they didn't lay the number of eggs that birds lay today, usually anywhere between 8, 10, 12 eggs per year. But still in all, they foraged around. Nobody brought them a sack of feed and put it in a feeder. And they survived, and they, you know, they have done very well. The carbon footprint, I don't believe in a whole lot of this carbon crap anyway. So, it sounds like an algorism to me. But I would say yes and no. I mean, if they have terrible conditions, terrible foraging material to eat, probably going to have to eat a lot in order to get to that point. And if that's what they want to count, you know, they made no mention in the study of what kind of food these free-range birds were eating. So it's pretty hard to judge. But, you know, just knowing how things work and being logical about it, I would say the one that had the better forest to forage in, so to speak, would probably have a less of a carbon footprint when you look at it overall. As to whether the manure from a commercial poultry house and a backyard flock are a whole lot different, there isn't really much difference. They're both very high in nitrogen. I listened to a roundtable discussion here locally because it's a big issue, you know, with the Chesapeake Bay. You know, they've been trying to save the bay for the last 100 years. So, you know, it's all caused by chickens and everything else, and that's not true. It's been proven time in, time out, but nobody wants to listen. But it is what it is. And I think that, you know, carbon footprint depends on how much a bird has to eat to produce that egg. If that's the question, then the better the material that the bird has to eat, the less the carbon footprint may be because of how much they don't have to eat. The bird that's got poor surroundings, not a lot of bugs, has to hunt and pick for water, you know, all day long, I would say maybe, yeah. And I just logically looking at it, that's how, I mean, I don't think I need a big study and spend $100,000 or whatever they spent to figure that out. I mean, it's not rocket science, it's chicken crap. And but, you know, it's an interesting thing. You know, the biggest holdup of Pat had alluded to most of the fertilizer coming from oil, and we have all this chicken manure and everything else. The biggest holdup is getting it to market in a reasonable fashion so that a profit can be turned on it. That's the biggest issue. We have Purdue Farms here. They have a manure processing facility that they've had open now for 10 years, and according to them, it's yet to turn a profit. A couple of reasons. The problem with manure is it's wet, and you've got to get the moisture out and still have nutrients left. It's a tricky process, but they're still working on it. They've just ponied up with some European outfit out of England to make some steam generation facilities that will burn chicken manure and stuff. So it's going to be interesting. It's coming. It's just the technology isn't there to do it in a way that is going to allow us to do it economically. Same thing with solar power. The cost of good quality solar panels are off the wall in most cases, and that's what drives the cost of it up. And it's not practical. The amount of time it takes to get your investment back is not worth the effort to put the thing forward, even though it's good for everybody involved, the planet and everything else. So everything kind of has its place. But yeah, chicken manure has been a fantastic fertilizer for many, many years. My neighbor, when I was growing up as a kid across the street, they were German, and he would always talk about the chicken shit, and that's what he'd call it. And he had a tremendous garden, everything he grew in his cold frames and so on, because it was up north, and you know, he had a few chickens in the backyard in the compost pile, and that's what he did. So, you know, all that stuff's pretty much been proven over the years. But in relation to what we were just talking about, I think it has to do with the quality of what's being presented for a bird to eat. And in some instances, I would even go so far as to say if they are free-ranged only and not fed some supplemental feed, they may never lay an egg. And because it is a very difficult a thing for a bird to do, because when they're not getting the nutrition that they need through what they're eating, they will take everything that they can out of their body until their body forces them into a position where they just shut down egg production. So I don't know if I took a convoluted route to answer your question, but
no, that's fine.
I think there's a couple of answers that were in there, and the using chicken manure as a fertilizer, it's coming, and Purdue is producing this in a pelleted form. One of the things, believe it or not, the funny part about it is, living here in chicken country, one of the things they said was they can't get enough manure here to run the plant at full capacity, and I thought that was kind of funny. I mean, when they move chicken manure, here usually twice a year, spring and fall, and there's chicken crap everywhere, roads everywhere. You can go into a little convenience store, and it's all over the place, parking lot, it's everywhere. So, don't understand that. But anyway, there was a question last week, and we never really got to answer it, and that was which came first, the chicken or the egg. So I did find the article that I had on that. Like I told you the other day, last week, just had to find what pile it laid under, and sometimes I'd label things in my computer with what I think I'll come back and be able to find it, but that's not always true. And this was from some British scientists, and their claim here that they've unraveled this this mystery, and that the chicken had to come first, and it's because of a protein that's found in the oviduct that makes the shell harden, and it's only found in the chicken. So it speeds up the development of the shell. It's what makes it. It's probably found down in the shell gland, obviously, because an egg spends about 20 hours plus in the shell gland. So, but anyway, so this is the chicken came before the egg. But, you know, again, if you believe in creationism, then, you know, and all of these other things, you know, God could have created the egg first. Chicken could have hatched out of the egg. Hey, who am I to know?
Exactly. Well, we thought you were the know-all, end-all, right?
That's you know I've never said that, my God.
No, we know.
No. I learn every day just like everybody else, and that just comes from the fact that I read crazily. Nobody reads like I do. I won't say nobody, but most people don't. And always looking to read something most of it, I would say 99% of what I read is geared towards chickens. I don't read some history stuff, but other than that, more interested in chickens. And I thought that I would, you know, there's been some flapping about again about the arsenic in chickens and so on and so forth. And it's kind of made me laugh just a little bit. But I have a book that I paid high dollar for. You might have heard me refer to it once or twice before on the show here, and it's called The Poultry Doctor. The book is from 1891, and it is all about herbs and everything else about how to cure everything. That goes on with a chicken. If anybody knows anything about Nux Vomica, it's mentioned many, many times throughout the book, and you know, used properly and in its place, these things, strychnine and arsenic have their place, but. I just thought I'd bring that up. It's not like it's something that somebody hatched yesterday and decided that this was the greatest thing in the world. It's been out there for a very, very long time. That doesn't always make it right either, so I'm not saying that. But it is in actuality, the arsenical compounds that they've been talking about have been extremely helpful throughout the poultry industry over the years. In actuality, the arsenical compound Roxasone was the first basic coccidiostat. It was only after there were more species of coccidia that were discovered, and then they found out that the Roxasone didn't cover that it became a growth promotant for chickens. I don't think to this day they've ever understood why it is able to make a chicken grow faster, put on more weight. And it's not fat that they put on, but they put on muscle. And it actually makes a coccidiostat work better. That's I've written articles over the years of a mixture of the Amprol liquid indoor powder with some of the Roxasone. The product we were using was called 3-Nitro-W. It was used in pigs. And it also helped to birds to feather out faster. So if you had birds that were lagging behind in the molt and you wanted to show them, you put some 3-Nitro in the water, and feathers would start popping out all over the place. It had its place. It's probably now outlived its usefulness maybe, but I wish I had some of it. I could sell it because people are still interested in it for the purposes that I just mentioned, not necessarily putting on weight, but I wrote an article years back looking for color, and it was geared towards the people who show birds because that's what you're looking for, that right red, bright head and everything else. And just when you're showing those birds, just a little bit in their drinking water during the show can make all the difference in the world. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. It's been around for a long time. It's not something that just popped up yesterday. Somebody just decided yesterday that it wasn't a good deal, more or less. So anyway.
We got thank you for that very much. So we've got a caller that's been on hold for a little bit that has a question for you.
Sure.
Peter, so let's go over here to the switchboard, and we'll go to caller at area code 610. I think it's Don. Tell us what state you're calling from, Don.
Hi, this is Don. I'm in Pennsylvania.
Thank you very much for your holding. And while we covered several little topics of news and whatnot, what's your question for Peter?
Thanks for doing the show. I really appreciate it.
You're
welcome.
I have
a small backyard flock. Yesterday, one of my bantams, a silver seabright, was attacked by a hawk. I interrupted the attack a few seconds into it, but she's injured. I've brought her indoors and kept her warm. And my question is, what should I look for signs of recovery? And basically, how long should I keep this nursing period going?
Okay. Where is the injury and how severe is it?
No blood. She was hit in the back or somewhere near the tail. She overnight she was not on her feet. She was on her side, but today I see her up on her feet. One foot seems to have some perhaps nerve damage. It's not extending. I don't really know. So initially shock and I guess trauma, but no blood. So.
Okay. Well, usually with these things, there isn't a lot you can do. The good part about this is that there doesn't appear, that there is any bloody wound or anything like that. So that's a good thing. It's very difficult to deal with from that standpoint. If you feel that there's nerve damage, that's hard to say. We don't know, what was pulled on, what she was pulling on, trying to get away possibly or any of those things. So what I would suggest is to give her, seeing as how there's no blood anywhere and she appears now to be recovering, it's a traumatic thing for them, no question about it. But I would probably start one baby aspirin, Bear brand, it's the best there is, one in the morning, let's say 7, 8 o'clock, and the other one about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and see if that doesn't help with this problem with the leg. There's no way of telling, and I don't even think an X-ray would tell unless there was something really out of whack, and then the cost of getting an X-ray and finding somebody to do it and then read the X-ray properly. So I think I would do that and start there and keep her inside till she's somewhat recovered. If she's not able to get around, putting her back outside where a hawk can make easy prey of her is not going to be a good deal.
Sure.
So,
Well, I was curious what you know, what we're 24 hours into this, and if she was going to rally, when I should look for it. Otherwise, I'll have to look at putting her down. So
I would. I'm kind of funny. I'd give her all the time I wanted. I usually tell people this because I don't feel it's my place to say, you know, put a bird down or whatever.
Right.
I believe in giving them every chance that you can. So, you know, it becomes a point in time when both of you have had enough. That's basically it. When you think that the bird is not progressing, and you feel you've reached a point of no return, and you're tired of messing with it yourself, then it may be time.
All right, I appreciate it. It's my daughter's pet, so it's
And it always is, you know. And that's one of the reasons why I figured that out, you know, beforehand, because most people who are, you know, rearing chickens for the show circuit and that kind of thing probably would have put the bird down already, because it's of no value to them now. That it's
right.
A different mindset altogether. And the fact that you were taking the time to, you know, nurture this bird a little bit, you know, pointed me in that direction. So,
well, here's a follow-up question. How long can I expect these guys to live? I think best calculations, she's 7 now.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because I have a story to tell. Right here in the state of Maryland, up around Darlington, Maryland, which is kind of north of Baltimore, a customer of mine just got one of his birds into the Guinness World Book of Records as the oldest living chicken, 22 years old.
Good for him. Good for her.
Yeah, and it depends on you. It's no different than a dog or a cat killing them with kindness. Too much junk and, you know, just not taking care of their overall needs as far as disease and disease control and those kind of things. This bird he's got is very, very fragile. I think a good sneeze would probably kill it at this point. What he's trying to do now is he's trying to get some offspring from that bird, but it's proven, and I had worked on the bird some years back with an issue that the bird had, and but they had just gotten confirmation from Guinness that it's the oldest living bird on record.
Well, you know, the chat room is talking about the hard economic times. I think I'm going to go work on inventing a chicken walker and a chicken wheelchair.
Maybe that'll. It's doable. It's doable. You know, as long as everybody's comfortable with it, that's what the deal is. That's what I always tell everybody. I'm not God. God didn't come down here and tell me to tell you to put them down. That's your job.
Well, hey guys, I appreciate what you're doing, and thanks. Keep it up.
Appreciate your call.
Hey, thank you. Sorry you were on hold so long. Thanks for bringing that to my attention in the chat room, and I'm glad we could get your call on air. Also, if you're a first-time caller and you just may not know, if you do call in, just press 1 to speak with the host. You can call in. When you call in, you can listen to the show live when you call in, of course. But if you have a question for Peter Brown, just press 1. Press 1 to talk with the host, and we'll be able to get you on the air and get your question asked to Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. And Pat, you're back live. I know you got disconnected a little bit earlier. I guess you went into a bad cell, but you are back now as well.
Oh, thanks, Whistler. Yeah, I'm traveling back to Tucson, so I am on the road, and it's desert. I mean, it's high desert here, so I'll keep the signal as long as I can.
No problem, and we appreciate you. We appreciate you joining us. It is 1 p.m. on the dot. So what we're going to do is we're going to take we'll take a short commercial break, and then when we come back, we'll try to get a few more questions done. We started the program about 15 minutes late today due to a death in the family. We were taking care of some plans and some business there and whatnot. So, we're a little bit behind for that. So we're going to go ahead and take a commercial break, and we come back, we'll get more questions on the air for Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back right after this short break. EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more.
order online at eggcartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's GQFradio.com. Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com, V-E-R-M-X-USA.com, to see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Let me ask the chat room a question here. Real quick question in the chat room. We don't have television, thank goodness for that, but have any of you, tis the season, seen this commercial already this year for the season?
Presenting the Clapper. Let your appliances turn on and off just by clapping.
Clap on, clap off, clap on, clap off.
The Clapper.
Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, you're back with us live. Have you seen that commercial this season already?
No, I have not.
I haven't. Well, of course, with having no TV, I haven't either. So I'll have to monitor the chat room and see. Let's see.
Yeah, I don't watch a whole lot of TV either.
Let's see here. Heather doesn't think she's seen that one. Walters has seen it, and he also has seen the Chia Pet. Chia. That comes on always here. So yeah, it's interesting. There's just a couple of those things that get kind of pictured into your brain. Pat has gone to La La Land again. I don't see her there, but we do have another caller calling in, Doc. So let's go to area code 270-270. You're live on the air. Tell us your name and what state you're calling from.
Hi, this is Critter Lover from Paducah, Kentucky again.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Brown, I talked with you last week about that hen that I thought maybe had an internal issue. She was stumbling. Instead of being an internal issue, it appears that something, either she has broken her leg or it's dislocated. She won't use it at all. And I have her in the house, and I've got food and water down for her, of course. But it just, the leg just hangs there and the foot curls up. Is there anything I could do for her, or should I take her somewhere and have the leg amputated, or what should I do with her?
When we were talking last week, what made us think, or you made you think, that it was an internal problem as far as internal layer, or?
No, I thought it was a coccidiosis, because she had had about, I'd had several hens that had a bout with it back in the spring, and when I picked her up, she was also really thin. Mm-hmm. I checked her for mites, I didn't find anything, but I didn't notice at the time that the leg was like it is. It doesn't seem to be a break along the long bones of the leg, but it's either broken or dislocated right at the hip.
Okay,
just,
so
there's
no
restriction
to movement. So I'm going to rely on you, because I can't see the bird, but what makes you think it's broken? Just because it doesn't move?
No, because it doesn't. It feels like there's no restriction, like the ligaments or tendons don't hold it where it belongs. It flops. If you hold her over to one side, it just hangs straight down toward the floor.
Okay. And the biggest problem we have with these things is nobody can see inside. You know, I can't tell you, you know, what's wrong, what isn't wrong. I can tell you that, you know, generally speaking, coccidiosis wouldn't cause this kind of a problem. But Merrick's disease would. An injury to the leg would, and you can't see either one of them. The leg doesn't have to be broken. I would guess, without even seeing it, that this leg is not broken, that this is a nerve problem, whether the nerve was injured in some sort of an altercation or getting a leg stuck somewhere. But I'm really leaning more towards a problem with Merrick's. We see this a lot. One of the tip-offs to this is the fact that the leg is not usable. The other one is that she's kind of wasting away to nothing. Can I say definitively that it's any one of these? No, I can't. And I don't believe anybody else can tell you that either, unless they were able to, again, look at an X-ray and determine. And yet I don't know if they would really be able to see anything on an X-ray, because if this were, let's assume just for a moment that this is a problem with Merrick's, where this would be happening is in a place in the bird's body in between the kidneys, okay, along the backbone, and it's called the brachial plexus. And that's a big word, and I'll tell you what it really is. It's a junction box, just like an electrical junction box. It's not actually boxed in, but it's an area of the spine where the nerves from the head, the neck, the legs, and the wings all meet. And then they go out to their respective places basically from there. When Merrick strikes, it enlarges these nerves. They are called tumors, but if you were to look at it, it's not. Okay, it's not what you would consider a tumor, but in the chicken world and diagnostic part of it, they would call it a tumor. To give you an idea, if you've ever, and I'm sure you have, had a piece of chicken breast and you start to cut it up, you run it along this piece of tendon-like material. Sometimes it's an opaqueish white. Sometimes it's a little on the yellowish side, depending on the chicken. And that is what this would look like. It is a broadening or a widening of the nerve that runs through this brachial plexus or junction box, so to speak. And that is why it impedes the electrical impulses from the brain telling the leg to move to go to the leg. And, you know, why she's not eating, maybe she's not getting to the food and the water. There may be other things going on inside, obviously, that we can't see. Removing the leg, I don't see where that's going to do any good. I don't think you would find a veterinarian to do it, because it's not, you know, they're not supposed to do any harm, and to me it would be more harmful and serve no purpose. What I would try, I mean, you have nothing to lose with this bird. Again, an anti-inflammatory, the bear baby aspirin twice, three times a day. You can't hurt them with it, so if you give it to her, you know, two or three times a day, it's not going to hurt. If it's a thing where she's hurt herself and is swelling, that should help bring it down. You've heard me talk about curcumin before on the show. That's a possibility that could help. A couple thousand milligrams of the curcumin potentiated with the bioperine. I mention these things because we know they work. Do they work in every case? No, nothing works in every case. But I think these are your options at this point. There's another, and I'm not saying this is what's wrong with this bird either, but, you know, a bird that's egg-bound will throw people off the track too, because as the egg comes down the oviduct, it can put pressure on these very same nerves and cause lameness, the inability to move the leg and so on and so forth. So it's kind of a convoluted thing, but I would, if I had $10 to bet, I'd put it on a problem with Merrick's, and if I was wrong, I'd lose my $10.
It's a strong possibility, because I have had issues with Merrick's here on this place before.
Okay.
It could be it.
Basically, the way I've done this over the years is you start to line up all the things that point to a particular problem, and then you just brought that up. I told you what I felt from where I'm sitting, just based on experience. Could I be wrong? Sure. It's a 50-50 deal. But based on experience, based on what I know about how it works, and based on what you're telling me with this particular bird, she will eventually take a stance of one leg forward, one leg back, or laying on her side with both legs out. Or she'll lay on her side, one leg forward, one leg back, or she'll lay one leg forward on her side and one leg straight out. It's characteristic of how they do. And then to get around
right.
The food and water, she'll scoot around on her wings. You've seen it before.
Right.
You know, if you had the Merrick's problem, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
The only thing that's going to tell you exactly what this bird has is if you actually get a postmortem done on the bird, and an experienced person who knows what they're looking at, you know, can look at it and say, yep, there it is. It's this nerve is enlarged, and it looks very simple. I mean, if you look at basic Merrick's that is involved with the nerves, it's not that big a deal. You know, you. Because everybody talks in terms of tumors, so you're looking for this huge tumor. It's not there. And they could have tumors on other parts of their organs or other parts of their body, no question. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying as far as the legs and the movement of the neck and the wings and that kind of thing, it is usually located down in the junction box. That's
so
I named
baby
it the junction
aspirin
box.
Help her?
Pardon?
I said, will baby aspirin help her?
Maybe. If I were going to do this, I would probably give both. I would give the bioperine. You can buy it in any health food store. It's not overly expensive. But I would get the one. It's the curcumin potentiated, and all that means is it has the bioperine, which is and these are all natural products that have been proven in the past to work. They do work in humans for the same type of thing. There's enough research around to prove that. It's worth a shot, but it's your money.
Okay. What was the dosage on the baby aspirin again? I know you said 2 to 3 times a day.
One bear baby aspirin, 2-3 times a day.
Thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, here we are, and we are back. Peter, I've got one more question for you. This comes to us from the chat room from Hooch. Andy, I have and let me go back here to the switchboard too. We for all of you who are calling in, if you do have a question for Peter Brown, you want to make sure you press 1 when you call in and you're prompted to do that. Please press 1 to speak with the host. And we've got two or three people that are calling in from apparently Skype, and we need you to call in from a landline or a cell phone where we actually have your cell phone number, because then you know we're going to you live. We'll say, caller calling in from area code blah, blah, blah. You're live on the air. State your name, what state you're calling from, please. So we've got about three that are calling in, it looks like, from Skype. A couple out of the three, I pressed 1. So if you'll call back in, we will get you live on the air with Peter Brown, and you can ask your question, but you got to call back in, kind of one of the show rules, call back in from a phone where we can see your telephone number. Landline or cell phone will suffice. Peter, got a question for you from the chat room here.
Sure.
I have 3 Rhode Island red hens. 2 are molting. The one not molting keeps pecking on the molting chicken's feet, causing considerable damage and forcing me to separate them. What can I do to correct this behavior? Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw somewhere the other day where somebody was posting some stuff. I can't remember where it was, but one of their Rhode Island Red roosters took on another one and killed it. So Rhode Island Reds, while they're nice birds, they can be aggressive. I would probably say the easiest way to do this, if you can separate them, that's fine. Why it's picking on the other one's feet, I haven't got a clue. But birds do this. We've seen it time in and time out. You can round off the end of the beak with a nail file. Problem with that is you got to keep doing it, and it may not. Chickens peck pretty hard. Anybody that's raised chickens for a while knows that if you get pecked by one, it's going to hurt. I would venture to say a set of pinless peepers would straighten this bird out pretty quick. Going to have a rude awakening once they get them on, and it doesn't hurt the bird at all. And in most cases, it will stop these bad behavior type problems. And if the individual would send me an email at chickendr at firststatevetsupply.com, we'll send a pair free.
We talk about pinless peepers a lot on the radio show, and so because it can cure a lot of that. If you have an injured bird and they're pecking at the scar, or the red from the blood, or whatever, or just hatefulness, or whatever the case. Yeah, we have definitely you have given away quite a few sets on this show of pinless peepers. So
there was a gal last week that had a problem with her birds, and I just want to say to her, I can't remember her name off the top of my head. Doesn't matter. I said I'd send her a couple of things free. When I spoke, I didn't have one of them in stock. It'll be here today, and that stuff will ship to her tomorrow. She had a problem with a hen with some feathering and what have you. So those things will ship to her tomorrow. I just don't want her to think I forgot her.
I've forgotten,
just didn't have one of them, and it's critical to what I want to do with her. So, but it'll be here this afternoon to ship out tomorrow.
Okay, perfect. We've got a caller, probably one of the or two that were on that calling in from an unidentified number. We can go to them now appropriately, and we'll definitely want to get their question on the air. They've been holding for a long time. So caller calling in from area code 915. 915, you're on the air. Tell us your name and what state you're calling from, please.
Larry, I'm calling from Texas.
All right. Thank you very much for holding. And what is your question for Peter Brown?
Well, one, I'm one of those culprits that I guess isn't carbon friendly, because I came to the realization that actually our Earth is starving for carbon dioxide, so we really need to make more carbon. So make a bigger carbon footprint, folks. I know. I'm not an Al Gore fan either. I heard that other guy, the doctor, make that comment. Yeah, Al Gore, he's something else too. But anyway, on the better things. Are y'all familiar with organic raising of the chickens at all?
Only to the degree that people do it, and
you know, some people feel it's better. What's your question?
Yeah. Well, so far to date, I've only found about 4 suppliers for organic feed,
mm-hmm.
and I'm fixing to go start making my own. And basically, because I've looked at the ingredients on the feed, and I can go to a health food store and buy in bulk human-grade stuff that I wind up coming out about the same on price. It's just a matter of a little manual labor involved, and that'd be about it.
On the on the 50-pound bags of the organic feed, I know in Atlanta they're running about $32 for a 50-pound bag of organic feed. There have been some companies recently come in and are coming in about $26, and I think I've heard even $22 per bag in the Atlanta area.
Yeah,
there
but
were
they
two,
make you pay for shipping too.
Right,
I mean,
that's crazy.
You get hit. Yeah,
exactly.
The shipping, it's like $25 or something. I'm like, holy cow.
We talked about this also the other day about your due diligence, and I'm trying to think. Dr. McCray was on, and it was a feed question, and she was asking about where this one lady was getting her food, and is it labeled, and all that, and it wasn't. So I know of at least in the last year and a half, there's been 2 producers of organic feed that ended up not being organic at all, but they had
I'm
an organic label.
This is the first time I've listened to y'all. I got turned on to y'all's radio, and
oh, thank
first
you.
Time caller. First.
We appreciate it. But yeah.
Can I say something? Because the main problem I have is I'm very familiar with genetically modified organisms, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And the lab tests involved have shown sterility, early premature death, sickness, a lot of things that I've heard these chicken breeders and stuff have problems with goes right to the deaths and results in the labs from other animals being fed genetically modified corn, wheat, you know, soybeans, and all this other stuff. And it's like, oh, my gosh, this is like a nightmare. This is right out of the lab test results I've seen for GMO crops. And I'm like, you know, it's insane. Myself, I eat organic pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, also, have you ever heard of anybody using colloidal silver on chickens?
Yes, I wish Pat Forman was still on because she is a huge advocate of that, everything that you're talking about. And I think a lot of our listeners do organic feed and organic themselves. We're anti-GMO. We've had Monsanto on the radio show.
Liars. I won't go there.
And we've drilled them before on the show and with their policies and tactics. But, I know Pat Forman is – is a advocate of colloidal silver. Yes, sir.
Okay, now as far as calcium, what do you know of anything natural that I could give them that would supplement for calcium, like crushed up oyster shells? Do chickens like convert that pretty easily, or do they have a hard time like humans do?
They convert it pretty readily because the oyster shell sits in the gizzard and starts to break down and leaches out of the available calcium from that. Most feed companies will use the cheapest of what's available, and generally speaking, that will be limestone. And
that's not good, though, because limestone can have, like, all sorts of toxins and stuff, including sodium fluoride, God knows what else, phosphates.
Yeah, I think that most of this stuff is a stretch. I've never seen any credible research, on those types of things. Most things are things that people think, and then somebody posts it somewhere, and it becomes reality.
Oh, no, sir, with all due respect, sodium fluoride does come out of limestone cores, and sodium fluoride was originally used as a rat poison. Back in the early 1900s, you can look this up. I mean, it's no lie.
Yeah, I know. You can find anything that you want. I'm not saying you're wrong.
Anymore.
I know that I don't know enough about it to sit and have an argument with you, and I'm not going to do that. All I know is that you can find something wrong with anything that you want to find it wrong with. You can find enough paperwork and everything else, and I just have not found anything that I have found that is extremely credible by credible people. Everybody's got an axe to grind somewhere,
And,
no, government reports admit that sodium fluoride is a totally lethal chemical, and it comes out of the earth. It's not good for anybody, but they don't know what to do with it. And when the phosphate mines pile it up, they found that they could spell it and let the third party use it and not have to worry about Environmental Protection Agency rules on toxic waste. It ceases to be a toxic waste once they sell it. It's a weird loophole.
So I've got a minute and 43 seconds left. So oyster shell would be appropriate, Doc, correct? Lots of people get oyster shell to get the calcium for the chickens.
Good deal. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for calling. It just, and I apologize for having you on hold. You may have been one of the callers calling in from Skype, so I apologize for not addressing that issue. But Peter Brown is with us every single Monday, and thank you for listening to the show. Thanks for finding us. We appreciate your feedback. We have a lot of listeners, I guarantee you, that eat the organic diet. They feed the organic feed. They're anti-GMO. They're buying local. It sounds just right up your alley. So we thank you for listening and hope you will listen in the future as well. I'm sorry we didn't have more time to discuss more of your question because now we have 56 seconds left. So, hey, Peter, thank you very much for joining us today. We'll be around, let's see, no show next Monday, and I'll probably not on the 2nd, too. I think I'll be on the road heading up to Nashville to help those folks get chicken legalized. So it may be the 9th of January before we have you back on. So we wish you a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and all best wishes to you and your family.
Same to you, Andy. Thank you.
Alrighty, and thanks for joining us. Already about 30 seconds left, and so we've got to run. Tune in tomorrow, Andrew Odom, tinyrevolution.us, about minimalist lifestyle, and you can follow us on Facebook later today. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you tomorrow.